This is Tell Me More from NPR News. I'm Allison Keyes. Michelle Martin is away. Coming up, Teenie Harris documented all aspects of life in a predominantly African-American neighborhood in Pittsburgh. Now we can see his work in a new exhibition. We'll talk with the curator in just a few minutes. But first, President Obama got an early gift from Congress. Both houses have approved legislation to extend the payroll tax cut and unemployment benefits for 2 months. Yesterday, a somber-looking House Speaker John Boehner announced that House Republicans had accepted the deal after a bitter battle. This, as Republican presidential candidates gear up for the upcoming caucuses in Iowa. Joining us earlier today to dissect this week's political news were Joy-Ann Reed. She's managing editor of thegrio.com and a contributor to MSNBC. Also here, Michael Steele, former chairman of the Republican National Committee. Welcome both of you back to the program.
Great to be here.
Good to be here.
We'll have to start with the announcement that Boehner made yesterday. He acknowledged that there were some politics with this issue that didn't fall in his favor. Let's take a listen.
May not have been politically the smartest thing in the world, but let me tell you what. I think our members waged a good fight. We were able to come to an agreement. We were able to fix what came out of the Senate.
So, Michael, Boehner sounds like he's trying to claim victory, even though several media outlets actually used the word cave to describe what happened. But what does this mean politically for him and those House GOP members who were initially against this deal?
Well, I'll put it this way. There's no victory here. This has been a very, very tough couple of weeks, an unnecessary tough couple of weeks, because the point that we've gotten to is one that clearly we could have been at 3 weeks ago and 4 weeks ago. And the fact that this is how we got here, the process exposed a lot of weaknesses within the caucus. The lack of communication between the House and the Senate members was really problematic. And so I don't see this as a victory here. The president has had a very good fall since about early October.
Right.
He's managed the message incredibly well. He's gotten out in front of the argument. He's laid the groundwork for that argument very well. And the Republicans right now are playing catch up.
Joy, earlier this week, the Wall Street Journal, of all places, ran an editorial suggesting that the debate got so out of hand that President Obama is in the catbird seat now when it comes to 2012. What do you think?
Well, I think in a lot of ways that's true, and I agree with much of what Chairman Steele said. I think the big narrative, or one of the big narratives of the fall, is just the weakness of John Boehner. He is Speaker of the House in part because of this Tea Party wave, but he has no control and really no influence over those 87 to 90 freshmen. They don't want to do what he says. He'll cut a deal, and they completely undermine him. He also can't really trust his deputies. You don't get the sense that Eric Cantor, who is the House Whip, or Jeb Hensarling, some of these quote-unquote young guns, are even loyal to the speaker. And then the third part is that Boehner is so weak and so sort of afraid of his position, it appears, that he can't do the obvious thing which would have saved him in this crisis, which is go to Nancy Pelosi and get the votes from Democrats. He doesn't want to be seen to have to pass bills with Democratic votes.
Joy, I wonder how you think this is going to affect the sitting members of Congress that were in the middle of this. The public on the street seems a little annoyed with them.
Well, I think that for particularly the freshmen, they're going to find out that the people who just pushed the lever for whoever the Republican was in 2010 because they were annoyed at the Democrats or annoyed about health care reform, they didn't sign up for the whole blue plate special of right-wing ideology. I don't think a lot of these voters understood how ideologically and how strident the members were that they were electing. And now that they're finding out, a lot of these constituents are saying, hold on a second, I didn't sign up to completely eliminate government / Medicare and give the rich a pass while we, you know, milk the poor.
Michael, I've got to ask you to jump in.
Yeah, well, I appreciate that perspective, but clearly
he raised his eyebrow at the blue plate thing.
The blue plate, I love that special. It goes down very well. But the reality of it is, I think voters, having spent 3 months on the road with those voters out there, I think they knew very well what they were getting. And part of what you've seen is something Washington has not seen. elected officials will actually come to town and do what their constituents have asked them to do. As much as we may moan and groan about the lack of cooperation and compromise, that's not necessarily what voters said last fall. They wanted these men and women to come to Washington to draw a very, very bright line in the sand on spending, holding the line on spending, cutting taxes, and doing the kind of cuts to government that we've seen. So I get that one side of it. I don't think it's as clear that voters are now going to turn around and give back the majority to the House. I don't see that happening at this point.
Let me move on to the Republican presidential candidates. They're preparing for the caucuses in Iowa, less than 2 weeks away. Ron Paul is the latest candidate leading in Iowa. Michael Steele, should we be taking him more seriously?
Well, I've always taken Ron Paul seriously. I mean, Ron Paul has been a national voice, a very consistent national voice for over 30 years, and is rather ironic and a little bit humorous that the things that he's talked about are now mainstream for conversation when it comes to spending and the like. Where we have a problem is, of course, his positions on foreign affairs, which tend to be a little bit isolationist. But I think, yeah, going into Iowa, you got to look at the chances that he would definitely come in a strong second, if not outright win Iowa right now. Mitt Romney has decided to put a push on. Newt Gingrich is going to hold his own there. And I think really be competitive going into New Hampshire and South Carolina as well. So I look for the Republican field to be a little bit fluid going through the month of January.
Joy, I wonder whether you think some of the candidates, Romney in particular and John Hutsman, who haven't been spending a lot of time in Iowa, are making a mistake.
Well, I think that Iowa has become less and less representative of the overall constituency of the Republican Party. I think it's so far to the right, particularly on the religious right, it doesn't necessarily produce electable candidates. But I will say back to Ron Paul for just a second, he may be popular with his libertarian core constituency that he's carried from race to race, but and also among liberal libertarians that love his anti-war stance. Mm-hmm. But he also wants to stop regulating food and drugs and not have the government help people get health insurance and get rid of Social Security. So his views are pretty extreme, and he's got some racial views that have cropped up in the past that I think are really troubling. As for the other candidates, I think that Romney's probably bigger mistake is now appearing to try to go big in Iowa and try to play belatedly, because now if he comes in fourth, it really looks like a loss.
If you're just joining us, this is Tell Me More from NPR News. We're talking about some of the week's hot political stories with Michael Steele, former chair of the Republican National Committee, and Joanne Reed, managing editor of thegrio.com. Yesterday, by the way, Mitt Romney's campaign got a kind of nice holiday gift, or at least a sort of endorsement from President George H.W. Bush. Let's take a listen to Romney's reaction yesterday.
I had the chance to chat with the president this afternoon and wish him a Merry Christmas. He did the same to me. I thanked him for his support, his leadership, his heroic life, and his friendship mean a great deal to me. I must admit, this is much more important to me personally than even politically.
Michael, does this quasi-endorsement even matter?
No.
Why not?
No. Well, because if anybody's been paying attention to the politics of this country for the last 24 months, and certainly the last 6 or 7 months, it's the people who are making these decisions. They don't give a hoot who's coming out and standing next to you, wrapping their arms around you. They may or may not like that person. So the folks are going to make up their own minds here. If an endorsement mattered, then this thing would be all over. I mean, given the endorsements that have already been racked up for Mitt Romney, the brother can't get beyond 25 or 30 points in any given poll for the last year. What does that tell you when 70% of the people out there still don't want to vote for you, despite what the folks here in Washington are doing and wrapping their arms around you? And trust me, the establishment in this town, they're not all that crazy about Romney either. I mean, you saw them push, the governor of New Jersey and others. So there's a reality out there that the people are going to bring home more so than any endorsement will.
Joy, some pundits out there are suggesting that this whole show of support to Romney might mean the Republicans are trying to head off their worries that Gingrich might be the nominee.
I think it's pretty clear that the establishment Republicans, anyone who's ever served with him in Congress, and Republicans more generally are horrified by the idea of a Newt Gingrich.
Horrified's a strong word.
Yeah, I think people are.
Because they know first of all, you know what.
Yeah, well, people know him, and he's very incendiary. He's very undisciplined. People can see it being sort of a circus with him as the nominee. But I think that the endorsement of the former president to Romney really cements two things. One, as Chairman Steele said, Romney is the establishment candidate right now. He's Wall Street's candidate. He's the old old guard of the Republican Party's candidate, but he's also the Bush candidate. And this has been an undercovered story in this race. His advisors, particularly in foreign policy, come from the Bush world. He has the support of Bush world. And if people bring Romney in, let's say, as the next president, you're really bringing back the Bushes. And I don't think people understand that.
Really briefly, there's been some buzz out there about a potential vice presidential candidate. And yes, I'm talking about former Secretary of State Condi Rice, Michael Steele.
Well, it's a novel concept. I don't know if she would do it.
And I should say Condoleezza.
I would advise her not to. But
really?
Yeah, because I think that she, you know, she's been in that limelight for a while, and I think she has some other things that she can do to contribute as opposed to getting back into that Washington morass at this point.
Joe, I wonder what you think about that and whether her record could be a liability, and fairly quickly.
Yeah, I think, first of all, she's so associated with the Bush administration and with the war in Iraq that I think it would be a liability in a sense. And also, she's had her travails with the right wing of the Republican Party, too. They got very angry when she said that slavery was America's original sin. She's admitted that there were some mistakes in Katrina. I think that could come back to haunt her. And listen, I don't know Dr. Rice, but I doubt she'd want to marry her brand to the Republican Party's brand at this point. She'd probably be wise to just stay away from it.
You said it more directly than I did.
Interesting.
That's why we're good compliments, Chairman Steele and I.
All right, with the love fest, gotta go. Joanne Reed is a veteran journalist and managing editor of thegrio.com. She joined us from NPR's New York Bureau. Michael Steele, former chairman of the Republican National Committee, was right here in our Washington studio. Thanks, as always, for
Thank
a spirited conversation.
Happy holidays
to you. Coming up, Charles Tini Harris spent decades snapping photos of African Americans in Pittsburgh's storied Hill District. The images capture everyday life, but still manage to tell extraordinary stories.
He conveys in a way that I've never experienced before in photographs the immediate experience of being in a different place, a different time. And because of his particular character and attitude, you see it through his eyes, and he thought it was wonderful.
We'll hear about a new exhibition of Tini Harris's photos now on display at the Carnegie Museum of Art. That's coming up on Tell Me More from NPR News. I'm Allison Keyes.